Please help me welcome Lindsay, our speaker tonight from Wilkes-Barre's, and her home group is Hole in the Wall. Please welcome.
Hi, I'm Lindsay. I'm an alcoholic. I apologize. I'm a little under the weather. I just got over pneumonia. So if I cough and stuff, I'm sorry. My sobriety date is April 19th of 2009. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor other women, and it's the most amazing thing that I've ever got to experience. I'm a little nervous. You know, hopefully that'll go away in a couple minutes. You know, every time I speak, it's amazing. Thank you for asking me. And, you know, like I said, I'm nervous. And because I have this ego that I want to impress all of you guys, and I want you guys to think I have, like, the worst story, and, like, I really need to be here, and, like, I'm the most amazing speaker you've ever heard, and you're all going to cry, and you're all going to laugh and think it's just amazing, you know. And that's what my head tells me right before I speak. And, but today, thankfully, I have a God in my life, and God helps me and removes those fears and allows me to get up in front of a room full of however many people and hopefully carry some message to someone in the room, you know. So I'll just start, you know, what it was like for me when I was a little girl. Before I got sober, I would have loved to tell everybody that my life was horrible. I had the worst childhood. My parents were awful, you know. But that's not what happened. I have the most amazing family, actually. I have two loving parents who are still together today, and they gave me everything they could, financially, emotionally. They supported me through everything. And I have two older sisters. We're still very close to this day. Except when I was little, like, there was just something wrong with me, like, from the get-go, you know. I was always disconnected. I was always full of fear. I just didn't feel okay. And I don't know what it was. I didn't know, you know. I was, like, this young girl, and I had this gut-wrenching pain in the pit of my stomach that was just there. And I acted out on it when I was young, you know. I hated sharing my toys. Like, I would purposely do things that I shouldn't do. Like, because if I was in pain, I wanted my family to be in pain too. So, like, I would, like, purposely break my mom's things and then, like, lie about it. I would, like, attack my sisters violently to get what I wanted. And that's how I was as a little girl. And, you know, my parents did everything they could to raise me with, like, morals and values. And they put me in Catholic school. So I was raised with a certain conception of God, that through my life, I came to hate. I absolutely hated God when I got to this program. But anyway, you know, like, my life was amazing, and I just couldn't see it. And that's my problem. My perception was not right. My perception was so twisted and skewed from what was really happening. And, so when I was little, I filled that, like, this void in my stomach, that pain. I distracted myself with other things. School, I had to be perfect at school. I had to get A's. I had to be number one in the class. I had to play a million sports, and I had to be the best at that sport. And that's how I was, and I drove myself insane when I was a little girl. And like, I had to be number one. Like, it made me feel like I was something. If I could be like, I'm the best in class. I'm the number one gymnast. I'm the best basketball player. I scored the most points. It gave me a sense of self. It gave me a sense of something. And that worked for a little bit for me. You know, it filled this void that I didn't know. You know, I didn't know other people didn't feel like that. I thought everybody felt like I did. I thought everybody felt disconnected and full of fear. And, you know, that kind of gave me this, like, I hate life from very early on. I really did. I don't know. I just had a really messed up perception even as a little girl. And it progressed quickly for me even before I found a drink. And that's why I know that alcohol is just a symptom of this disease for me. because before I ever picked up a drink, I was so miserable and so resentful and so full of fear that I tried to kill myself at age 12. I found cutting, which was my first relief. It was probably one of the first manifestations of this disease in me. I found cutting, and for a temporary moment, that gave me relief from the craziness, the noise in my mind, and it made me forget about that pit in my stomach that never went away. And I don't know, I partnered up with this girl in middle school, and we decided we hated the world, and the only way to get over that was to kill ourselves, so we made a suicide pact. By age 12, I tried to kill myself, like I said. And I was unsuccessful, obviously, and I got sent to a psychiatrist and got put on meds at age 12. I got put on antidepressants, and you know, it didn't really do much, and I say this with all the honesty in me. Thankfully, I found alcohol very shortly after that. I found alcohol probably when I was like 12 or 13. I had my first drink, and I remember before that, I don't know, you know, I'm sure other people have this experience. Like, I would watch my parents and their friends drink, and they'd have their beers and their margaritas and whatever they were drinking. And they just looked like they were having a lot of fun. They were dancing and they were laughing, and I wanted that. I wanted that because I wanted to feel like they did, like what I saw. You know, I wanted to smile and I wanted to be okay with myself, and I didn't know how to get that. And when I found alcohol, I got all of that. Like, when I first took a drink, I felt like I could finally breathe okay. I felt just like, okay, I can make it through this world. Like, I can make it through life if I have this. I can be okay. And I remember, you know, 12 or 13, I didn't drink that much after that. But when I was 14, I got with, like, a group of girls, and they all had parents who didn't seem to mind if we drank that young. And after that, I was off to the races at age 14. Like, I just kind of gave up on school. I gave up on every sport I was in. And I signed away my life to alcohol. I don't remember my exact first drunk. Like, 8 of them happened right in a row. And I loved it. I absolutely loved the way alcohol made me feel in the beginning, you know, because, like, when I walked into a room before alcohol, I would be so full of fear, and I didn't know what to say to you guys, and, like, there was so much going on in my head, and I was so worried, like, what if I said something you didn't like? Or what if I embarrassed myself? How would I cover that up? Or whatever. You know, like, I was just so full of fear, and alcohol took that away, and it gave me a peace of mind, and it filled whatever was going on in here. It just made that disappear, and it was great. It was awesome. I'm not going to lie. I loved it in the beginning. I absolutely did. And I chased that feeling I got from the first drink for a really long time and let it destroy my life. And so drinking took over my life very quickly. And by age 17, though, it kind of didn't work as well as it did in the beginning. And I switched alcohols a lot. I did the, like, maybe it's just the liquor, maybe it's just the beer, maybe it's this. Like, vodka makes me emotional, so I can't drink that. Or, like, whatever. Like, just making up excuses. And, like, when I was 15, like, I was being brought home by the cops a lot. And I come from a very small town, and everybody knows everybody. So when I got brought home by the cops, like, nothing really happened. My parents would be mad at me, and they'd just be like, please, like, stop. Like, don't let her do this anymore, you know. And so my parents decided that there was something severely wrong with me, that I was already drinking every night at age 15. So they tried to take me to rehab. There's this rehab by my house. It's up, like, this huge, huge, like, couple-mile hill. And my mom knew the director of the rehab, and she took me up there, and he's talking to me, and I looked at him, and I was like, I don't care what you're saying. I cursed him out, threw a chair at him, and walked down the hill. I had absolutely no desire to stop what I was doing, and I didn't care what he had to say, because I'm selfish, and I'm self-centered, and I like the way alcohol made me feel, and if I was hurting you, sucks to be you, because it's about me. And that was my attitude. That was how I was. Except, like, I didn't see it like that. I thought I was actually this amazing, caring, wonderful person. And, like, I would be like, I don't know what you're talking about. Guys, look at, I'm just, you know, whatever. And that's how I was. Like, I just, whatever. I made up lies and I manipulated. I'm really good at manipulating. I'm the youngest of three daughters. My dad would do anything for me, honestly. And I used that to my advantage my entire life. And so anyway, after that, I think my parents kind of were like, well, not yet, obviously. And so, like I said, I went on like that. I don't really remember high school at all. Kind of like bits and pieces. I probably missed at least 75 to 80 days every single year. I don't know how I passed any, I don't know. And by age 17, though, I was really crazy, and alcohol was completely running my life. Alcohol had already become my master at this point. And the problem was that it didn't quite do what it did in the beginning. My head came back on, and it didn't quiet it down as much, and that hole started growing. And so one night when I was drinking, I became very suicidal again. And I tried to kill myself, and my dad, who is my hero today, tried to stop me because he walked in on me. And I got so viciously angry that he would try to stop me from doing what I wanted to do that I went after my dad, and I tried to kill my dad when I was 17. And that was really hard for me because, like, I love my dad today. And he just wanted to save his daughter. And they had to call the state police on me and take me to the hospital. And that was my first trip to a psych ward. And that's the kind of drunk I am. If you get in my way, I will take you out. And that's what my disease does. It takes me hostage. And it destroys anybody or anything in the way because it wants me dead. And it doesn't care what it has to do to get it. And so I had a lovely stay / vacation in the psych ward for 9 days at age 17. And they decided I was bipolar and put me on meds that work very well with alcohol. We were talking about that on the way up, actually. And suddenly that fear was gone again. And the noise quieted, and I was like, all right, okay, found my solution. Here it is. I'm good to go again. I can live life. And somehow, even, like, though I missed that much school, I got by and made it into a couple really good universities, and I ended up going to Temple and moving into North Philly. Great place for someone like me. And I only made it 5 months because I went to one class, and Temple has 30,000 undergrad students. I was no longer welcome there after 5 months, and I'm saying that, like, I really like frat houses, party houses. They were like, please don't come here anymore. We just don't, like, can you just not come because it's too much? And I'm like, why? Like, I didn't see what I was doing. Like, I just didn't see it. Like, I thought, like, when I drank, I was just so awesome. And I thought that, like, everybody just thought I was great. But, like, they would tell me the next day, they'd be like, Linz, like, what happened to you? Like, we're walking around, like, Kensington in North Philly searching for you. And I was like, I don't know where I was because I didn't. I didn't. I would black out, brown out, whatever. And I had no idea, like, what would happen to me. And, like, I would, like, be found, like, by my friends, like, wandering around North Philly. And I was like, I was just coming to find you guys. Where were you at? Like, that's what I did. And so, you know, like any good alcoholic, after I was no longer welcome there and failed every class miserably because I never went, I called my dad and I said, Dad, I really miss you. I just don't think I'm ready to be away from home yet. And, you know, I think I just don't want to, I don't want to waste your money, and I think that I should come home. I really do. I think it'd be a good idea if I came home, and of course, here's my dad, and he knows he's the biggest enabler in my life. He was like, okay, getting in the car now. And he came and he got me and we packed up my dorm room. And, like, while I was there, like, the RA and, like, the security from, like, my dorm would be calling my parents. Like, we haven't seen Lindsay in 2 weeks. Is she at home with you? And they knew what I was doing. But my dad just, my dad thought that love would fix me. You know, he thought that unconditional love would fix me. And that's what he did. And so, you know, I'm such a great alcoholic that I use that, like I said, I really use that to my advantage. And I moved home, and I ended up actually, my parents did not like my drinking because of the things I do when I drink. I use you. I lie to you. I will manipulate you to give me money. I don't have to steal because I'm really good at manipulating, and I'm like, especially someone like my dad. And so they didn't really like that. And so I moved in with a friend who, her father was an active alcoholic and just really enjoyed having people to drink with. So I moved in with him, and I just drank and did some stuff and other stuff that enhanced that. And that's how I spent my life. And then I found bartending. And bartending is a great job for me. I make money well. I could get drunk. I love it. And I was like, I call my parents. I'm like, I found my calling in life. And they're like, great. And I'm like, I'm going to bartend. And they're like, oh, no. And I'm like, it's going to be so awesome. And like, I was good. And they're like, okay, if you have a job, then you can move back in with us. And I was like, okay, awesome. So I moved back in, except like I'm going to work. And I'm coming home real drunk after, like, a four-hour shift. And they're like, you're not 21, and you're definitely not supposed to be drinking while working. And I'm like, it's all right. You know, the customers want to do shots with me. Whatever. Whatever I needed to do to justify what I was doing, I did. And, you know, it's just all a blur. And all the while, my disease is progressing, and my head starts turning back on, even with these added medicines that I got from the doctor, and my head starts turning back on, and like this restless and irritable and discontent, and no matter what I do, I'm not happy. No matter where I'm at, I'm not okay. No matter how much alcohol I put in me, I don't feel okay anymore. And but I'm still like, my mind tells me, though, like, if you just drink today, it'll be okay, Linz. Like, that, you know, you just didn't have enough last night, or that alcohol doesn't work well for you. You need to try a different one. And that's what I did. And so since, like, Philly didn't work, and then I was back in Wilkes-Barre, and I got really bad again and ended up in detox after my 21st birthday, like most normal people do, I was like, well, you know, at first I was like, it's just Wilkes-Barre, you know, this area is my problem, you know, blaming other things, outside stuff, trying to fix myself with, you know, everything outside. I decided to move to Delaware. One of my sisters lived in Delaware. And when I got there, right after detox, like within an hour of detox, I was drinking. And I was like, she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, it's okay. I was like, I'm just going to have a couple, you know. I was just sober for, like, 8 days in there. I'm fine. And she was like, okay. Like, she didn't know. You know what I mean? And, like, her and her husband graciously took me in, and they have a 2-year-old and a newborn. And here I come, like, ripping and running through their, like, beautiful house, new family. And I'm like, okay, like, I'm fine, you know. And within a week, I drank every drop of alcohol in their house. I'm going back to Philly a couple times a week, and they just couldn't take it. They were like, Linz, we can't do this, you know, and I had to leave, you know. They have 2 little kids. They can't have someone like me who's drunk constantly in their house, and so I moved back to Wilkes-Barre, and I decide that it's not Wilkes-Barre that's the problem. It's actually the entire northeast part of the country, because it's just, like, the people in the northeast are just, like, the attitudes, and like everybody just drinks, and like it's that's the problem. So I know that Florida will fix me, because also not only is it this part of the country, but I definitely have seasonal depression, because I mean it's just so like cold and rainy and like snowy in the winter, and like who is happy about that? So I have to go to the beach. You know, the beach is definitely like I'm so happy when I'm at the beach. So that's definitely going to be my solution, and I definitely tried that out. I moved down to Florida, and ruined a friendship of 13 years. She was my best friend, and I ran through that girl's life and blamed her all the while. Like, every time something happened, I was like, oh, Mom, you don't even know what this girl is doing. Like, she is so selfish. She's so crazy. Like, she's just so, like, and, like, she's self-centered, like, naming everything I am and blaming it on her. And I couldn't see that it was me, though. I couldn't, like, I had no idea it was me. I was so delusional. And when I get down to Florida, you know, I drive by myself for 20 hours down to Tampa, Florida. And I had no idea that the amount of loneliness I felt when I got down there existed. I knew loneliness, but I didn't know it like that. And I got down there, and I'm just, I'm a mess, you know. I can't show up at work, and I can't function, and I can't even be a friend to this girl I've known for 10, 11, 12 years. She has to take care of me because I'm DTing every day. And not only did I start DTing every day, I started hallucinating from how much I was drinking. And I was like, I don't know if any of you have seen the movie The Strangers. I'm not exaggerating when I say this, because this is really what happened to me. In the movie The Strangers, there's this guy with this, like, really creepy bag over his head. And I had watched that one night when I was really drunk and completely convinced myself that that guy was real, and that he was living in my closet trying to kill me. And so, like, now not only was, like, my, like, embedded fear in there that I had, but, like, this irrational one, too, about this hallucination that I thought was real was there. And at first, I was like, oh, my God, like, I'd be, like, praying to a God that I absolutely didn't know existed, but if he did, he sure as hell forgot about me or hated me. And I was like, please don't let this guy kill me. Please don't let, like, this is me in my room by myself, because I can't leave my room. And I'm just, like, praying, like, please don't kill me, to a hallucination. And I'm sleeping with a butcher knife under my bed just in case. And then the loneliness just got worse and worse, and the fear of what was going on and the hatred for myself overtook my life. And I started praying to my hallucination that he would kill me, and I started praying to God every night to please kill me, and I started trying to kill myself every night for 6 months straight. I tried to drown myself. I've tried every way possible to kill myself. And I was a mess, you know. I was losing my family. I had lost all my friends. And I came to a point where I couldn't live with or without alcohol. I knew I really wanted to stop, and I knew something had to change, but I couldn't. I couldn't stop. Alcohol was like my best friend my whole life, you know. It was just so... It was always there for me, you know, and my delusional mind told me that it would fix things no matter how bad it got, and that I would be okay if I just took a drink, like if I just picked up and like took one sip, I'd be okay. And so I would wake up and I would drink and I would take a handful of Klonopin, and I would start drinking, and then I would start crying because I knew what was going to happen. And then I would pour it out, and then I would cry even harder because I just poured out my alcohol. And then I'd have to go to the store and get more. And I'm 21 years old, and this is how my life is. And I'm living in a beautiful gated community in Tampa, Florida, next to Busch Gardens, and I could see the giraffes walking from my back porch because I thought that would fix me. And the outside stuff doesn't matter for somebody like me. You know, it just doesn't fix someone like me. And I've tried all of that, and I've tried guys to fix me. Man, I used guys like crazy when I was out there, you know, because I thought that would fix me. I thought if, you know, I could just make you love me somehow. If I just slept with you, you know, you'd probably love me or save me from myself. And it never worked. And when I was down in Florida, like, that cycle was just going on and on and on. And like I said, I couldn't make it to work. I couldn't even get out of my bed. So I overdosed, and I really tried to kill myself, like, seriously, and I almost succeeded one night. I recently had surgery, and I drank a whole lot and took a lot of pills. I don't even know. And I know that God looked out for me when I couldn't look out for myself, because I shouldn't be here today. I remember, this is the only part of that night I remember, is that I was sitting on my back porch, and I could physically feel my body shutting down, but my mind was still going because alcohol and pills and everything had stopped working for me. And somehow, even though I couldn't put a cigarette up to my mouth, I managed to dial my mother and tell her goodbye. And thankfully, my mom loved me enough to save me. And she was 20 hours away, so she called my roommate. My roommate rushed me to the hospital. The doctor said they had absolutely no idea how I was alive. Like, it was just almost impossible how much I had in my system. And they were like, let alone she's, like, ripping the IVs out of her arm. Like, I don't know what's wrong with her. And I ended up back in the psych ward, you know, because that's where I go take vacation. And it's a great vacation spot. you know, I when I was in there this time, I really did know that obviously something was wrong with me, and I needed to change something. Excuse me. And I knew that, like, something had to change. So I promised, like, myself, and I made those convictions that we make and those sincere promises to the people who love us. I'm not going to pick up again. I'm not going to drink anymore. I just can't do this. I don't want to do this anymore. And they were like, all right, good, you know. My parents are like, thank God. And my roommate comes to get me. Yet again, save me. And I'm like, I'm not going to drink anymore. And, like, this is, she picks me up, and I'm like, I'm not going to drink anymore. And she's like, I think that's a good idea. I'm like, me too. And 5 minutes later, we get to Target, and in Florida, they sell alcohol everywhere. And we walk in, and there's a beer sale. And everything that just happened completely was, like, nowhere up here. And I was like, oh, my God, beer. And I was so excited that there was a beer sale. And she looked at me, and she was like, you just overdosed. You just got out of the psych ward, and you just said you're not drinking anymore. I was like, well, it'll be like a just-in-case. You know, we'll just – it's a really good sale. We shouldn't pass this up. And, like, that was my logic, because the problem with this disease and the problem with my mind is that I can't bring into my memory – with any force, the pain and suffering of a month, a week, or even a day ago. It doesn't matter. And she just looked at me, and she shook her head, and she knew. She knew what was coming. And I was off and running again, like 48 hours after I almost died. I didn't care. So I began drinking again, and it was same as always. The fear took over. You know, I couldn't do anything. It wasn't working. Like, the volume that was going on in my head, like, used to be shut off from alcohol, and now it just intensified. My suicidal thoughts intensified. Everything intensified. And on my 22nd birthday, I got arrested, thankfully, because it saved my life. I got to spend my birthday in jail. That was fun. I got pulled over. It's so crazy how I got pulled over, too. I was literally 2 feet from my apartment because I thought I lost my cigarettes. So I was like, oh, I got to go to the store. And I went to this, well, I tried to go to the store, and apparently I cut off a cop. And that's what he says. And and I got pulled over. And, you know, my ego immediately kicks in. And he rolls down. I roll down the window when he comes to the car. And he was like, oh, like, it just poured out of the car. And, like, the smell of alcohol. And he was like, stay in the car. Don't move. Like, didn't ask for my license. Nothing. And I was like, why are you pulling me over? You know, here comes my ego. Like, I can't do anything wrong. I'm perfect. And I'm sitting there. What I feel like is way too long and unjustified. So I, like any good alcoholic would do, I get out of the car and fall. And and he comes rushing up and was like, ma'am, you were not supposed to get out of the car. And I was like, well, I just want to know why you pulled me over. And that's, like, that's the thing. Like, I have, like, I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not. You know, I'm so delusional. And I think the world revolves around me. And so I got taken to jail, and I blew very high. I blew 4 times the legal limit 3 hours after I got pulled over. That's how I was driving. That cop saved my life and probably saved somebody else, because I could have killed myself or somebody else, you know? And so I spent my birthday in jail and detoxed in jail. And I knew at this point that I was going to die. I just knew I was going to die if something didn't change, and or I was going to kill somebody else. And I could, at this point, I could live, I didn't care if I died. You know, I was okay with me dying. But I was not, like, I still couldn't, like, be okay with the fact if I hurt somebody else like that. You know, that was another time where God did for me what I could not do for myself. You know, God showed up to me in the form of a cop. And, I'm grateful for that today. At that point, I was not grateful. I was really angry that that cop came to me and pulled me over. But today I see it very differently. And it's because, you know, I work a really great program and I have a God in my life, you know. And so when I get out of jail, and here's my best thinking, and this is where, like, my insanity of the disease kicks in. So, like, I get out, and I've never done heroin, so I'm just, I know this is AA, but I'm just going to throw this out there. I've never done heroin. And, like, this is my best thinking, like, you know, 24 hours sober. I call this hotline, and I'm like, I need to get sober. What do I do? And this guy, I don't know if he was doing a commitment he didn't want to do or what. And he's like, well, you need, like, $30,000 for a good rehab. And I was like, oh, crap, I don't have that. And so I call my mom, and I'm like, Mom, I need $30,000 to get sober, and since I don't have that, I'm just going to go buy some heroin and kill myself. Like, that was my best thinking of what would solve this problem. And that's really what I thought would I should do. And my mom was like, oh, my gosh, if we have to sell the house, like, please do not do that, Lindsay. And I was like, all right. I was like, Mom, I really want to get sober. And I remember she started crying, and she said that she'd been waiting to hear that for, like, 5 or 6 years. And then we were both crying. And thankfully, one of the nights while I was drinking by myself, watching Intervention to prove to myself how much I was not like you guys, I remember seeing a rehab that was in Tampa. And I called them, and they took me in. And I did an outpatient program, and I got introduced to AA. And I remember my first AA meeting, and I only remember a couple things about it. I remember walking in, and it was a huge, huge open discussion meeting outside with a lot of young people. Probably everybody was young. It was in Tampa. They have an amazing group of young people down there. And there was probably, like, 100 people. I don't know. and it was outside, so everybody was smoking, which I was really, really happy about. And I sat down next to this kid that I was in rehab with, and I'm just, like, scanning everybody, and I'm like, I hate her. Oof. I definitely can't even, like, no, she's gross. Oh, she, I don't like her. He's weird looking. I have no idea what anybody's saying. And then this girl that I really hated. She was sitting in the center of the circle next to the guy who had the binder, and I didn't know why he had the binder, and I didn't know why he was talking a lot, but I didn't like him either because he just liked attention, apparently. And the girl next to him is, like, smiling and, like, happy, and she shares for, like, a couple minutes about how happy she is, and, like, she lost her job, but it's okay because she has so much going on, and she's so this and that, and I was like, oh, my God, puke. I couldn't even, and I knew I was definitely not talking to her, and, you know, because I'm in such great shape, I'm in the position to be judging others, And I remember the kid next to me, it was not his first time around, and they do chips down in Tampa a lot, and they're like, okay, is this anybody's first meeting? And he, like, nudges me, and I was like, what? And he's like, you go get a desire chip. And I was like, in front of everyone? And he's like, yeah, it'll be good. And I was like, I immediately start sobbing and hyperventilating because I'm a drama queen, and I go up to get my chip while I'm hyperventilating and crying and just covered in snot and gross. And after the meeting, I remember I was like, all right, I got to get out of here. And I'm running out of this meeting. And that girl who was sitting next to the chairperson, who I really hated, grabbed my arm, pulled me in for a hug, and said, welcome. I'm so glad you're here. And that girl saved my life. And I get emotional about it because she did. She saved my life. Because I don't know if I would have made it back. I don't know if I would have came back because I thought it was really weird that everybody, like, hugged and prayed and stuff. And I hated God. And this girl didn't care what I looked like. She didn't care that she didn't know me. But she hugged me and told me she loved me and told me it was going to be okay and that I didn't have to be alone anymore. And it saved my life. And it gave me something I had not ever felt in my life before, and it was hope. It was hope that maybe there was a different way of life, and maybe, just maybe, I would be okay. And I was okay that night. I was okay. And she called me the next day, and she said, I'm coming to get you. Taking you to a meeting, and she introduced me to, like, 30 women who were the same way as she was, like, happy and, like, this, and I'm, like, sitting there, and I'm shaking, and I don't know what to do, and she was like, listen, you need to get into the big book right away, and I have no idea what the big book is at all, like, I don't know what she's talking about, and I was like, okay, like, at this point, I was so desperate for anything, I was so desperate for something, anything, whatever. And so willing, because I was so defeated. And she's like, I'm going to California to see my sponsor for 10 days, but I'm going to hand you over to a girl who's going to take you through the steps, because I don't think you can wait 10 days. And I was like, okay. Like, I had no idea. And she gives me this girl's number, and I remember sitting there, and I was looking at the phone for, like, hours, and I would, like, dial the number, and then I'm like, oh, no. And then I would dial the number, and I was like, I can't do this. And I ended up finally calling, and I called, and this girl jumped me into the steps. And I went through the steps, and I'm not here to tell you how to work your program. I'm not here to tell you to go through them fast or slow. That's up to you and God and your sponsor. It's not up to me. This is just what worked for me. And I went through the steps really quick, and it was amazing. It was amazing. For the first time in my life, I began to feel, like, happiness. And it wasn't, like, because I put, like, a whole bottle of tequila in me. Like, I felt happiness, and I was laughing. And I had people in my life who were there for me. And, like, when I would call at, like, midnight, telling them my head was going a million miles an hour, like, you know, telling me all of the mistakes that I made, you know, in the past, just remorsing like crazy about all of the things that I've done in the past and worrying about the future, like how was I going to put my life back together and what was I going to do? They would just sit there and listen and let me know that it was going to be okay and they've been there before. And that's what I love about this program. That's what I love, because there's nothing more powerful than one alcoholic sharing with another, you know? And I didn't, hopefully I don't need those anymore. I just lost my train of thought. oh, thank you. I don't know, you know, when the obsession for me to drink was removed. And I don't know when I started truly having a relationship with a God of my understanding. But I know it happened without me even looking. And it was because I trusted this girl. And for some reason that I didn't know, because I didn't trust women. I'm sorry, girls, I hated you all. And I did. And I don't know what it was, you know. It was something outside of me, and it was something greater than myself. And it came into my life by such a storm, and it started giving me things that I didn't know existed, like love. For the first time in my life at age 22, I felt love. And it wasn't like me seeking it out. It wasn't me trying to fix myself. It wasn't fake. It was in my heart, and I couldn't deny. Like, I just couldn't deny it. I had no idea what it was. And somebody was like, oh, you're feeling some love. You know, you got hope in your life, and that's what this is about. And a lot of people say early sobriety is really hard. Like, it definitely isn't easy. But, like, I loved my early sobriety because some girl picked me up and took me around, and she carried me through when I couldn't do, you know, anything, when I didn't know what I was supposed to do. And it's so hard for me to talk about the sobriety part. It's so hard for me to talk about the feelings that have come and the gifts that I've been given since getting sober, because, like, I know misery and I know pain and I know fear really, really well. You know, I lived that my whole life. But, like, love and, like, hope and, like, being tolerant of my fellows and helping people, that's still new. And it's something that I feel in my heart. And it's something that the best way I can tell you, if you don't know what I'm talking about, like, you need to experience it and find somebody who will help you experience that, you know? Like, I tell the girls that I work with, like, you know, I can tell you all I want about what this program has given me. And it won't do it justice. There's just no way. Because what I have today, it's, I can't put into words. You know, I can love selflessly. I can show up for my family. I can take responsibility for the things that I've done wrong. I respect other people, and I love who I am today. I absolutely love myself, and that's something I didn't even know was possible. I didn't know loving myself was possible because I hated myself for so long, and the way I live today is definitely something I would have never dreamed of, planned. The people I hang out with are definitely people I probably would not have hung out with. you know, we're all real crazy and we have such a good time, and that's what this program does, you know. It's given me a life that I can't say it's beyond my wildest dreams. It's something that I could have never dreamed of or imagined or even knew existed. And that's what this program has done for me. Like, there was no way 3 or 4 years ago I would have told you that, like, I love God and I will pray anywhere and God, I can just be okay with whatever happens because God's got it. Yeah, right. Are you kidding me? Today I can say that. I don't care if people like me. I don't care if I look crazy. I don't care if I make mistakes. Because I know that, like, I'm human and that God is with me. And I'm just learning to live my life today. And it's awesome. And because of that, I have the most amazing friends. I've gotten to make some really cool amends through this process, ones that I never thought I would ever walk up to somebody and be like, oh, I did this, you know, and be able to make those things right, and I have. I'm a part of my niece and nephew's life, the ones that I couldn't be for a really long time. I moved back in with my parents, which is crazy, and I'm going to school, and I take 5 classes, and I work, and I sponsor, and I'm active in the program, and I don't say that to brag. I say it because I could never do any of that without God and without the love and tolerance that all of you guys have shown me and the things that the people in these rooms have taught me. You guys have given me more than I ever deserved. You guys have given me love in my heart and the ability to be somebody that I didn't know existed. And I'm so grateful for that. And it's a beautiful way of life. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, like this love thing, and you're like, shh, that girl's crazy, that doesn't exist, please get with somebody. Please get with somebody. You know? Because this is something you don't want to miss out on. Like, it really does work. And I can tell you that if it didn't, I wouldn't have just drove with 2 carfuls of people from Wilkes-Barre, you know, on a Monday night to speak to a bunch of people I don't know about a God that I have and love and trust and how I stay sober and my experiences. You know, because without this, I'm way too selfish to do anything like that, you know, and I wish I could put it into words for you guys. I really do. But look around the room. And if you, like I said, if you don't know what I'm talking about, the person who their eyes are glowing and they just laugh for no reason and they just look happy, and you kind of want to punch them in the face because they look so happy, that's the person you should go up to and say, how did you get that smile? Because it could change your life. It will probably save your life if you let it. And I wouldn't have any of this without you guys, without God, the 12 steps, you know. It's amazing, and that's all I have. Thank you.